Michelle Reinen with Dad Cap is our guest to talk about some of the hot topics for the month of June. First of all, we talk about internet safety. It seems like that's kind of an ongoing thing, Michelle.
It is. You know, when consumers want information, advice, reviews, or resources, their first step for many is an internet search, and online search results can be very helpful and allow people to find what they're looking for quickly and accurately. But the systems that produce those searches are also used by scammers to steer consumers in the wrong direction and possibly to a fraudulent or imposter website. So we want to be sure that consumers are aware of this during Internet Safety Month and provide a few tips on how consumers can tell the difference between trustworthy and deceptive search results.
A lot of times you'll have some sort of protection, or you should have anyway, that will pop up and kind of give you an alert, won't you?
You could have that, yes. But there are two major ways search results can be manipulated by scammers, in that search engine optimization and paid search results. And so if we have awareness that those two things exist, we can pay attention to those pop-ups, know what they mean, as well as navigate the results we do get. So search engines are the tools used to search the web. You know, think Google, Bing, DuckDuckGo, and the others. And they're programmed to display results that are most likely to be what we're looking for. However, these results can be influenced by legitimate businesses as well as scammers to make their website appear first in the search engine. And that maximizes the visits that they could get. And the way that happens is scammers might use bots, keywords, and phrases generated by AI or even paid services to boost their fraudulent website in those search results. And then that leads us to that second thing, those paid search results. Those first few results at the top of any search are usually ads that companies or even scammers pay to have appear there when users make those specific searches. And so if you might see a legitimate company's name, including the name of a government service, or a misleading tagline to make users think that the website belongs to someone else. So pay attention, because scammers could even put their phone number next to trusted company names and try and trick you to get to their imposter website instead of the legitimate company that you are really trying to access.
What about paid search results?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's when, you know, we might see those misleading taglines to make the user think the website belongs to someone else. Those paid results may show that they're advertisements. They're going to be the top items that are returned for users. They may say sponsored on them as well, and that's helpful when they're labeled. It's when they're not labeled that we need to use those extra precautions and pay close attention to the information we're getting. And don't be afraid to scroll down, because that might be where your best result is actually located.
Old school letter mailing scams are back in the news, Michelle.
Yes, they are. You know, we talk pretty regularly about the latest technologies to steal consumers' information, but scammers still rely on the old tried and true tactics, and we need consumers to be aware of those old school methods. And some recent examples are letters, fraudulent letters that consumers have received in their mailboxes. And the first example is a letter that claimed to come from a Canadian law firm and stated that the Wisconsin-based recipient was eligible to claim a stranger's life insurance policy worth almost $10 million. And the reason given was that the original policyholder had no other relatives or beneficiaries, but they shared a last name with this consumer, and they were possibly a distant relative. So the letter was addressed directly to that individual consumer with the correct name, was printed on official-looking letterhead, and then the law firm asked for 10% of the money, so over $980,000, in order to process the claim. And that's where the scam is. You know, the law firm is part of the scammer, and it's not a legitimate firm in this case, and consumers could get tripped up by that when they're so excited to have received this potential opportunity for a windfall.
What about Medicare, Medicaid scams? Are those in the news too?
Yes, we also heard from a consumer who received a letter that was a scammer impersonating Medicare. The sender threatened the consumer, who would soon be turning 65, and they threatened him with a penalty fee for enrolling in Medicare past a deadline. The letter offered helpful tips, information, and resources. It provided a fake website and fake phone number if the consumer had any questions. And finally, it included a fake enrollment registration form to be filled out and sent back to that, quote, Medicare, that scammer. And of course, that questionnaire asked for personal information that the consumer would have to give in order to, you know, not get that penalty and get enrolled.
What are some ways we can avoid getting in a jam?
Well, pause. That's the biggest thing, the first thing. Pause, then talk to someone that you trust. It's really important to not act right away so you can just get past the shock and awe of the letter or the threat that might be in the mailing or the phone call. And then research the sender. In many cases, scammers are not impersonating a real company, like in the law firm situation. And so you can do your research and figure out that it is all a scam. But then learn more about scams in general, because there's a lot of well-established templates out there. And if you just search the scam with complaint, you'll find out more information about it. But never be afraid to call Consumer Protection.
So, obviously, there are ways that you can avoid those things. We can all get sucked in, and some things, you know, out of curiosity's sake, you might fill out a survey or a sweepstakes form. What should we do in that case, Michelle?
Well, you know, filling out those surveys and sweepstakes entry forms just adds to your data contribution out there that a scammer can use. So you can have a little bit of control on where your information goes if you ignore those surveys and questionnaires and sweepstakes and try and minimize the amount of information you're sharing. The other thing you can do is exercise your consumer's right to opt out. Financial institutions are required to notify consumers of their right to not have personal information shared with outside companies. So you can opt out of mail offers and pre-screen credit and insurance offers. And you can do that at optoutprescreen.com and get your name removed from those lists. And then you just want to try and reduce the total amount of unwanted mail you get, that junk mail. And you can do that by writing to the companies individually, asking them to be taken off their mailing list. But you can also register with the Direct Marketing Association's Mail Preference Services. Again, that's Direct Marketing Association. And you can register for 10 years for just $2, and they won't share your information. They'll remove you from their circulation list. And so when new companies are going to that list for who they should send their promotions to, your name won't be included in that.
Not related to this, but, you know, it used to be you could get on a no-call list. We get a lot of spam calls these days. Is there anything that exists still in that regard?
Absolutely. There's still the national Do Not Call list, as well as the state of Wisconsin Do Not Call program. And you can go to our website in order to find out how to register your phone number. And that's a permanent list once you're on it. So you can reach out to datcp.wi.gov to get all that information, and that should stop those unsolicited telephone calls that you receive. But again, those are for solicitations, not the scams and not charitable or political calls.
Well, summer is here, and we want to talk about, and we've talked about it on this program a little bit, about trying to reduce some screen times. Do you have any suggestions there and things that parents should be aware of, Michelle?
Yeah, we're thinking about screen time as it relates to protecting kids from online scams, accidental purchases, and identity theft. Parents should talk to their kids about the risks of online chatting, social media, and gaming, as well as best practices for keeping their money and identity safe while online. And online gaming is very popular, and it's a big activity among kids and teens. It offers entertainment, social interactions, and skill building, but parents need to take those steps to ensure gaming remains that safe and positive experience. And two easy things they can do is just setting parental controls to limit chats with strangers. limit those in-game purchases and the screen time. But then they can also talk about online chatting and the risks of giving out personal information as it relates to, you know, identity theft and not wanting a stranger to have that information.
Certainly, there are some ways that you can do that as a parent, but obviously, you don't know sometimes what your kids are exposed to, you know, and they're online. You know, how do you kind of get around those things, Michelle?
Well, we come in where it relates to being exposed to advertising while searching for video games on an app store, maybe downloading the game, or even during gameplay. And nowadays, ads really compete for players' attention at every stage of the video game playing experience. Some ads even charge an account without a parent's knowledge or approval. So parents should consider the preventative measures to protect their kids from accidental or even unauthorized purchases prompted by ads. And they can do that by reading online reviews and ratings before downloading apps or video games. Maybe watch videos of people playing the game and then check out what players are saying about it online in advance. Activate those parental controls again if making a purchase. Don't allow the game to save payment information, because this can prevent that accidental or unauthorized purchase. And then just establish clear family rules for kids using apps and video games, whatever's going to suit your situation. But these can include things like screen time limitations, restrictions on voice or text chats, and how and when kids can buy a game or make an in-game purchase. And, you know, setting those developmental rules in place will really go a long way.
Student loans and some debt scammers also in the news recently. What can you tell us about the latest?
Well, of course, there's changes in this landscape, and we've been talking about that for years. But on May 5th, the Federal Department of Education resumed collection on student loan debt for defaulted federal loans. And so we want to alert consumers to the possibility of scammers taking advantage of another changing situation, you know, so they can benefit themselves. So the collections were paused in March of 2020, if you remember, but now that involuntary collection efforts like wage garnishments, tax refund offsets, and Social Security benefit reductions are back in effect for defaulted federal student loans. However, before wage garnishment can begin, affected borrowers must receive a 30-day notice, and it's expected that the borrowers in default may see wage garnishment begin this summer. But the borrowers may search for ways to reduce or more effectively repay their student loan debt, and scammers know this, so this is where they'll prey on that desire that those borrowers have.
Are there some red flags we should watch for?
Yes. Watch for requests for upfront fees. If a company charges upfront to reduce student loan debt or assist in debt repayment, it's likely a scam. Promises of immediate loan forgiveness or cancellation. Before they even know the details of a consumer's situation, scammers might claim that they can quickly eliminate or reduce their debt. They may reference real programs that few people actually qualify for. Requests for a student aid ID, or the federal student aid ID, the FSA. Some scammers claim that they need this number to help them, but that ID should never be shared. It has the same legal status as a signature, and a scammer with someone's FSA ID could access their account and take control of their personal information without their knowledge. So that's your private number. Also, limited time offers. To get consumers to act fast, scammers will instill a sense of urgency by saying that they could miss qualifying for a repayment plan, maybe loan consolidation or a forgiveness program if they don't act immediately. And then I think the fifth red flag we have today is requests to sign a third-party authorization form or a power of attorney. These written agreements give a company legal permission to make decisions with a consumer's federal loan servicer on their behalf. And scammers use this to change consumers' contact and payment information, stealing the money without their knowledge. So don't ever give that third-party authorization over to anyone.
Are there some things that we can do to be proactive?
There are. You can stay in communication with your loan servicer, regularly checking on the status of your loan and finding resources that can assist with repayment. And we have three trustworthy resources we can provide today. That's the Wisconsin Student Loan Help Hotline. It can be reached at 833-589-0750. That's 833-589-0750. It was created in partnership with the Wisconsin Coalition on Student Debt and Ascendium Education Solutions to just really help borrowers figure out what their options are. And they aren't going to ask for your personally identifiable information. And it's a call you will initiate. But then there's the Wisconsin Coalition on Student Debt. You can find them at debtsmarts.org. That's a nonprofit seeking to raise awareness of student debt, college affordability, and loan repayment issues. And so they're always trying to keep current and provide the most up-to-date information that's a reliable resource. And then the federal student aid at studentaid.gov. That's an office of the U.S. Department of Education and the largest provider of student financial aid in the U.S. So that, again, is a resource that you need to go for the current, most up-to-date information. And again, that's studentaid.gov.
Michelle Ryan, an administrator with Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle, have you ever been scammed?
Oh, well, do I have to disclose? No. Certainly, you know, there's a great story about 3 weeks ago. I got a phone call to move an appointment that I'd made almost a year ago. And, you know, I trusted the call, and then they said, can I get your date of birth? And I almost started to give it. And I said, I can't do that. And the woman's like, why not? I said, because I don't know that you're who you say you are. I have to hang up and call you back. And so I caught myself, and I know how easy it is to just get tripped up and just, you know, practice what I'm saying all the time is just quite the thing. So, of course, I called back. It was legitimate, but you just can't be responsive to those phone calls as honest as you think they may be.
Yeah, I'm sure the person you called probably understood, though, didn't they?
Well, after I called them back and told them where I worked, yeah, they understood then.
I bet they did. All right, Michelle, good stuff as always. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next month.
That sounds great. If anyone has any questions, go to our website, datcp.wi.gov.
Michelle Ryan, our guest here on this month of June from WRCO.